Welcome to Top Advisor Marketing, where you'll learn how to become a prolific online influencer, attract more ideal clients, and grow your practice. Brought to you by Advisor Content X, a done-for-you podcasting solution built just for trusted advisors. And now, your co-hosts of Top Advisor Marketing, Kirk Lowe and Matt Halloran.
Today, Kirk and I are going to talk about the demise of prospecting. Kirk, how are you doing today?
It's gloomy outside, but I'm feeling bright inside.
Fantastic. Well, that's good.
Gloomy outside, bright inside, yes.
We're going to use the gloomy outside, though, because the topic we're talking about today is actually a little bit on the gloomy side, which is the demise of prospecting. You did a bunch of research on this, so let's dive in and help us unpack where you are with all of this.
I let other people do the research for me. Well, case investment news, benchmark study of financial performance, and some, and then Michael Kitts was breaking that down. So
okay.
He's done a great job. Just to be clear. So, you know, one of the most interesting things that I've been reading is about how referrals are down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, referrals being down is not necessarily the same experience that I'm having with some of our clients. But this is a study and we got to take it for what it's worth, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a Quantiva study back in 2008 suggested that the studies said that 75 to 90% of an advisor's practice revenue is derived from direct referrals.
Hmm.
This some of the stats that I'm reading here, and there's some different angles at it, which aren't exactly the same, but it looks like it's between 45 and 50%, or 55. So between 45 and 50% now.
So that got cut in half.
That's a
eight
huge
years.
Difference. Yeah. And I even saw some other stats that looked like it may be as low as 25%. That's a huge difference. And one of the reasons that they're saying this is happening is because there's less do-it-yourselfers to convert.
Interesting.
So this is assuming that a lot of referrals that advisors were getting over the years were to people who didn't have a financial advisor. And I would have to say that most of my career in financial services was not about finding do-it-yourselfers, because most of the advisors that I've associated with and work with are top advisors, top producers.
Mm-hmm.
And they were typically trying to steal clients from other advisors, for lack of a better word.
Oh, sure.
And so I'm not sure I completely get that, but I do agree with something Michael Kitts actually wrote back in 2013, which is that there's a crisis of differentiation in this industry.
Okay.
And I think we can both agree on that, because we've experienced it time and again with new people that we meet.
Well, let's pause there. Let's talk about what do we mean by that? So I want to hear what your definition, and then I'll jump in with mine.
Well, I'm going to give you Kitts's definition of that. And then I'm going to give you mine. And then
okay. Beautiful.
So that works.
Yep.
So he was talking about the fact that personal financial planning customized to the individual needs of their clients is one of the most common phrases you read on anybody's website.
Yep.
And that's 100% true.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first one. So if everybody's doing the same thing, there's a crisis of differentiation. There's a problem. The second one is that a lot of advisors have a CFP certification. I think CFP certifications are up by 70% in 2016.
Oh, wow.
That's huge.
That is big.
So if everybody now has the same certifications, then that's no longer a point of differentiation.
Sure.
Plenty of advisors are highly experienced and have years and decades of working with clients.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the age of the advisor, I see it trending a little younger, at least who we're working with and talking to. But certainly it's an aging profession. So you got to think, you know, everybody's got lots of experience. And the fourth one that came in was that was operating as a fiduciary.
Mm-hmm.
That's slowly being not a point of differentiation, especially with the DOL stuff coming.
Right.
If that unfolds the way everybody thinks it will. Anyhow, so, I mean, when you look at that, so though those are really great perspectives. I would also say that most advisors use words like trust, integrity.
Yep.
Putting clients first, things like that. Those are all table stakes. And, you know, I've been wording it like that for years. Kitts's words are the same way. You know, these kinds of things are just table stakes. So how do you go beyond that?
I'm sorry, hold on. What is a table stake? Is this a Canadian
thing?
Just
to get at
the
table to be a financial advisor and be in the business, that's your stake. Is you got to be offering customized planning. You got to have a CFP. You got to have been in the business for years and know how to serve people. And you're probably going to have to be a fiduciary.
Okay.
So that's a starting point, if you will.
I got you. That makes sense. Is that a Canadian term? I've actually never heard that.
Well, it just refers to playing cards.
Okay. Aha! It's a card poker.
And
okay.
I am not a card poker guy. I'm not a gambler, which means I love playing cards, but I cannot stand gambling. I just takes the joy out of. I don't find any rush whatsoever from it.
Yeah, I actually thought you were talking about the food, but that's okay. It's around lunchtime for me. I'm hungry. That's where that goes. Okay, so how do you explain it?
You know, advisors using the word trust, integrity, putting clients first. You know, things like that. Those are.
So you're agreeing with what he's saying here. So,
but on top of that, there's some other stuff that I see all the time at financial advisors. When we talk about, hey, how are you different?
Right.
You know, you can trust me. I care.
Clients' best interests, clients first.
Yes, holistic planning. Yeah. There's certainly a big overlap. I think they're all true.
Okay. And they're true. But like you said, they're table stakes, right? But the difference is you have to have a legitimate differentiation. How do you even begin to have that conversation with clients? How are we going to, I mean, this is what you and I both do with Top Advisor Marketing, but can you elaborate on that a little bit more now that we've slapped our audience around a little bit by saying, hey guys and ladies, what you've been saying is tripe, right? It's just the same stuff everybody else is saying. How do we, or how do you, in your experience, tease out the right things that make somebody truly come across as being unique or different?
That is the question, isn't it?
It is the question.
So I've got, as you know, and maybe our listeners don't know, for all of our podcasts, we create a mind map in mindmeister.com. I wish I had shares in that company some days, but
you and me both, brother. So, I refer to a lot of people to that company.
Yes. Anyway, for next podcast or the next couple coming up, I was going to offer up my four questions for discovering your brand. It is pretty in depth and I don't think it's a good time to get into it.
Okay.
But I want everybody to know that it's coming down the line.
Okay.
So, but it's, you have to look deep inside. You have to figure it out. Let's just say that the point of this podcast is how you, why you need to figure this out and how the impact of advisors getting less referrals or growing less through referrals than they did in the past.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean to your business?
Okay.
What are the new mindsets? What needs to change? I mean, advisors are relying on non-referral sources to grow their business. And so according to Investment News' 2016 benchmarking study, here are the top four perceived best marketing tactics.
Oh, all right. Go for it, dude. Okay. What are they?
So these ranged most of the tactics in this study, and you can go find this. We'll provide a link in the summary. Were between 55 and 70% as far as how effective they thought they were.
Wow.
So and these are in no order.
Okay.
Radio. So having your own radio show, direct mail, online advertising, and social media. Those were the top four.
Wow.
There were some close runners up, community involvement. Print advertising was there. That one killed me when I saw that.
It's unbelievable to me. I hear advisors still talk about that all the time.
Yep. So remember, these are perceived.
Right.
I don't even really understand perceived in a study and the value of it, but I don't know anybody who's having success with direct mail outside of maybe somebody who's selling a very commoditized specific product.
Right.
But those are, I just don't know anybody and it can be very expensive.
It is horribly expensive. I'm going to jump in there because the first two that you talked about are cost prohibitive for most people. Radio, if you have your own radio show, and I want you to give your example of the guy down in Florida. I'm going to give an example of an office in the Pacific Northwest who is spending $7,500 a month just to be on a radio show that is branded somebody else's radio show just for them to be on it. $7,500 a month. Tell everybody about the guy down in Florida.
Their spend, marketing spend, I don't know, and it's pretty much all radio,
mm-hmm.
is $800K, and they're bringing in 1.3, 1.4, something like that.
So that is such an abysmal return on investment, everybody. I mean, it has to be giving you an appropriate return on investment. If I write a check for $100, I would like to get $1,000 worth of business. That makes sense. In fact, on social media, you and I have both had great success with that, where we'll spend a couple hundred dollars and make thousands of dollars off of our advertisements or whatever we're doing on social media. Now, direct mail is this expensive, too. I mean, if you're going to do a seminar, you're dropping $10K just on the mailer.
Yeah. I mean, I think that if you're investing in your practice in the first year, I think you got to expect to do, you know, at least two to five times. Mm-hmm. And then as you get good at something, more than that.
Yeah, like 10. Abso-freaking-lutely.
Yeah. And so they're tough numbers. And most advisors aren't going to go for that. I mean, those advisors have chutzpah. Is that what they call it?
Chutzpah. Yeah. Yeah. Chutzpah.
I think it's a crapshoot.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody's measuring.
Well, nobody's measuring with radio, dude. Right. I mean, I just had a conversation with an office this past week. This guy's been doing a radio show for like 10 years. And I said, are they getting you in front of your target demographic? And he's like, well, what are you talking about? I said, well, you know, we've worked on your ideal client, because that's one of the things that we do at Top Advisor Marketing, is who do you want to focus on? And he said, well, man, I have no idea. It's a AM.
It's mostly a no. I mean, with
right.
the examples that I know, most people who are getting quantity are not getting quality.
Sure. And it's the same thing with the direct mail, right, Kirk? I mean, here's the deal. Some of the direct mail, and I want everybody to just perk up for a second. This could be more damaging to your brand and your business than the benefit. Because my mother, who's 74 years old, gets 3 invitations to seminars a day. And some of them are really nice. Wedding style invitations, handwritten envelopes, oversized postcards. Do you know how many of those she goes to, Kirk?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. Which would be 0. And so she said to me, I remember I was prospecting a gentleman here in town from a coaching perspective, and I was talking to my mom about it, because my mom knows everybody. And I said, hey, do you know so-and-so? And she's like, yeah, that's that schmuck who sends me an invitation to a seminar like 3 times a month. I was like, well, I'm not working for that guy.
I have a friend and past client from Texas, and he was in Toronto this week, and we went out for dinner. We'll call it that anyway. And we had a great time.
Good.
Wonderful guy. And he's got a very successful business in the millions. And he's been doing seminars for a long time, but it is a grind.
Mm-hmm.
And he invests a lot of money in that, a lot of his staff's time. And we don't talk about the ROI, but I know from past conversations and working with him more closely that, you know, it was not exceptional.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, very difficult to sustain. And I think that is one of the greatest challenges with how financial advisors pursue marketing, is they don't pursue things they can sustain.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
It's a huge, huge philosophical difference for us mm-hmm. at Top Advisor Marketing. And one of the reasons we moved from, you know, from our old brand to this one was because I wanted to push this idea more and more that simplifying marketing is huge,
mm-hmm.
and it should be huge for advisors, because if it's not simple enough, you won't sustain it. And if you don't sustain it, it's not marketing.
Right.
It's dollar flushing.
Mm-hmm.
I just made that up.
That's nice. Now, you wrote a paper on this, right?
So, could you visualize that?
Yeah, that was.
If you can't visualize it happening, it wasn't very good.
I know. That's why I kind of tried to get off of that really quickly, because my mind immediately went to the toilet.
One of my most frustrating things in this business, and it's because I really care about what marketers say and do for financial advisors, and it's not always been great, is that they don't have experiences that keep them from wanting to come back and invest money with other marketers.
Mm-hmm.
And do good things for the business. And we're going to talk about that in a couple minutes. I've got some ideas here.
What else do we have here about the death?
I think the problem with referrals is that we don't know how to inspire them anymore. Programs, scripts, all the things that people are pushing us to do to get more referrals are the opposite of the mindset you need to have to be great at marketing.
So let's talk about that mindset shift. So how do we need to rejigger our listeners right now to look at things fundamentally differently about prospecting and about marketing?
The first thing is we have to move away from this idea of selling, and financial advisors, the financial industry has typically been a sales driven industry, but that's changing, which is really good. I mean, there's advisors who've been around a long time who've shifted and done a really great job of it. And there's other people who are suspended in jelly trying to figure out which way to go. So selling to talking, sharing, proving, and being patient, you know, go from your terms to their terms. So I like call it personality over philosophy. You know, every advisor wants to talk about philosophy. You know, when our podcast last week with Judy and Paulette, you know, we're talking about reasons that advisors lose their clients after the husband dies, is because the advisors always talked about philosophy and tactics and stuff like that. Didn't ever make the women feel included and part of it, and didn't speak to them what mattered to them, which is personality. Do you care? So, you know, focus on doing it on their terms, your marketing and how you run your practice and how you run your meetings when you first meet with them. Another one is the quick close, going from a quick close to a lifelong focus. So not thinking about, okay, now they're in front of me, how do I close them? Or how do I get somebody in my office so I can close them? It's how do I build a relationship and things like that. So it's a completely different mindset to get to that place where they become a client. And then when they become a client, it's a different shift as well.
And we've talked about that in previous podcasts. That's the difference between, you know, dating and marriage. We're looking for a long-term marriage, and a lot of advisors date and then try to close immediately where they need to be dating for a longer period of time to start building that expectation of a longer-term lifelong focus. Is that where you're going with that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Another one is referral, like redefining what a referral is. One of the things I was a little skeptical about when I hear people talk about referrals is I think a lot of advisors have maybe trouble measuring or identifying what is a referral or not a referral. And I think, in my opinion, a lot more things are referrals than are not as far as what an advisor might qualify as one. So I qualify referrals a little more broadly because I think network marketing is really – it's direct and indirect referrals.
Right.
You get what I'm talking about?
I do.
So there, I think you have to – a mindset shift is to focus on your digital connectedness. I know too many people, especially people who are mired in older tactics like doing seminar marketing, for instance. So if you've been doing seminar marketing for 5 years, let's say you've done one a quarter, so that's 20. I'm pretty good at math.
That was quick, dude. I'm impressed.
And let's say they've got 100. Well, that's not reasonable. Let's say they've got 10 new buying units every quarter. So that's 200 people. It's probably going to be more than that, but simple number. 200 people of those, maybe they have 10 in their social networks as an example.
Sure.
And advisors have forgotten that the digital connectedness might actually be more valuable than the real life connectedness. And so if you do anything after you get done listening to this podcast, make sure that you have everybody that you've ever met and talked with is connected to your social channels. You know, not everybody's going to want to be connected to you through LinkedIn. I love LinkedIn, but
well, we're B2B though.
We're going to focus on Facebook.
Right.
Maybe some of them are Twitter if they're a little bit younger and more savvy. And maybe it's even Instagram. You can have some fun on Instagram. Most advisors are thinking, how do I do that? But there's some guys who are doing some really great stuff on it.
I want to jump in with the digital connections because this just happened to me yesterday. I had been prospecting. I have a guy on my prospect list, a financial advisor who I had worked with at my old company and who I always really liked. But it's been 6-7 years since I've talked to this guy, and he's just been on my radar. And we just posted, or I posted on my LinkedIn profile that you and I merged, right? That Dr. Brandon Top Advisor Coaching turned into Top Advisor Marketing, and here's what we offer. And I shared some stuff about the website. He called me because of this update and said, "Oh my God, you're doing exactly what I've wanted you to do the entire time." And that's one of the things that people don't really understand is just because you're not getting, and gosh, Kirk, we deal with this all the time with the social media aspect of our podcasting service. People are watching. Like this guy, he didn't like my stuff, right? He's not one of those people who feverishly goes in and likes and comments, but he's like a lurker, right? Or a stalker. I like lurker better because stalker has such negative connotations. There are a lot of people who are lurking on your social media profiles, and you just don't know that until they actually take action. And that's why when you're saying what you're saying about connecting with everybody, let them lurk. It takes 10 times for a person to see an ad or a post for them to consider taking action on it. So used to be A plus B equals C. You did a seminar, you closed some business, they became a client. Well, it's not like that anymore. And so let's talk about an example of a real life. So you talked about digital. Let's talk about the example that we just talked about a couple of days ago about the real life connectedness and how this advisor used the podcasting service and the white paper service. Would you mind telling that quick story?
Yeah. I mean, we haven't even launched this, guys.
I know. I love this. This is awesome.
But he's running with his brand. This isn't the first time this has happened.
Yeah.
I think actually one of the first client, American client that I had that really springboarded me and my career and my company was the same thing. Before we got done his brand, his website, he was out selling his brand. And he was coming back saying, "My gosh, everybody's like saying yes and wanting to talk to me all of a sudden." Yeah. Because before I was so darn boring, I was stuttering with what I wanted to say and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, this guy's at a barbecue. So that's your network, mm-hmm. right? If you're at a barbecue, that's part of your network, in my opinion. I would call being at a barbecue meeting somebody an indirect referral.
Absolutely.
I know people don't like that, but it's not advertising.
Right. Yeah, good point.
Not print. If you hand them a business card, you cannot call it print marketing. Maybe that's what they were thinking when they put print marketing.
Yeah, maybe.
It's a perceived best marketing practice. Oh, boy, that one's killing me.
Yeah, well.
Okay, so he's at a barbecue. Somebody asks him, you know, what do you do? It happened to be somebody he didn't know. That stuff happens when you go out in the world. You meet new people. And if you're at a place where it's somebody else, they're likely to be people like them,
mm-hmm.
most, right? Which is how people work. And basically just asked him, what do you do? And he had a great one-liner that wasn't like everybody else's. And he said, "And I have my own podcast. It's called Beyond Conventional."
Mm-hmm.
So, "You have a podcast? That is so cool." He must, and he can tell that this guy's thinking, this guy must be really smart the way he's right. talking. Must be a real leader in financial planning.
Confident.
"Can I get a link to your podcast? Can you send that to me?" "Well, I've just done my first three and we're getting them approved and they'll be up soon. But so I can't give that to you right now, but I can give you my white paper." "You have a white paper?" "Yeah, I do." "5, 6, blah, blah, blah. I'll get that to you." He sends it over to him. Within a week, he calls him back and says, "My gosh, you've brought some stuff to my attention that I never thought about before. Mm-hmm. Let's meet." And Bob's your uncle.
Bob's your uncle. So I love that story. I just told that when I was doing a group training on the 10 steps to niche marketing, which is part of one of the new programs that we're offering at Top Advisor Marketing called 270 Days to a Better Practice. And when I told them that story, one of the ladies who I was talking to looked at me and she said, "Yeah, I would have done the same thing," because it's something about being elevated. When you say I have a radio show, it makes you seem kind of old school, right? Oh, you're just an old school guy. But when you say you have a podcast and that you have a white paper, people really don't necessarily understand what a white paper is, but they really think it's impressive, especially if it speaks to them directly, which is one of the things
that
we do.
Can we stop our podcast right now for station identification? And an ad from our local sponsor.
Yes. Would you like to do that?
Seriously. I have a new prospect and new client.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like him. We're going to have a lot of fun working with him. But he has his own radio show. And he said, "Well, I really have my own podcast," when we first started talking. I said, "Well, let me listen to it." I went to it. Oh my gosh. A radio program is not ever going to give you an audio file that is actually like a podcast. It's not even close. He didn't even come on till like 5 or 10 minutes into the program, and it was mostly advertising. It was like, oh my gosh. I was like, you – I felt like a Valley Girl there. I was like, oh my God. The passion comes out in weird ways sometimes. So I told him it was really more like a negative podcast.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't even, it was bad. And so it wasn't very hard to convince this gentleman, convince him or share in the excitement that a podcast is a great opportunity because you get rid of all the junk and you just get down to business and you can be yourself. Show a little personality, whether that's good or bad or silly or whatever it happens to be, or Valley Girl, it happens. And people realize that you're a human and they can start identifying the conviction in your voice if you really care about helping financial advisors grow their practice or if you really care about helping people invest their money.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to a colleague the other day who we're talking about having on as a guest, and he was talking about this advisor who he's worked with who works with disabled families with disabled children.
Mm-hmm.
And he created a niche and he absolutely killed it in the city he lived in. And he is incredibly fulfilled, making really good money and profit. And like I've said so many times, when you have a niche, you can add so much value.
Oh, yeah.
It's very difficult for other advisors to come take away your niche or to compete in it because you've got a big advantage when you know exactly who they are, what to do for them. I've got another client that I'm working with too, who their reporting analytic ability and who they work with, scientific and engineering associations. Oh my gosh. It's very difficult for other people to be able to replicate what they do because they've got such a great niche. So we're helping them advance their message and their story to go deeper and further. But I love hearing stories like
that. I was just talking to the gentleman who was the inbound lead for us at Top Advisor Marketing, who said he'd been following me for a long time and was really excited about it. One of his biggest frustrations with the radio show that he does specifically is he has to have it be an hour long. And he said, Matt, there are times where I'm really struggling to fill an hour's worth of content. And I said, well, you know what? The nice thing about podcasting is if you want to talk for 15 minutes about a topic and you elaborate on it enough, then your podcast's 15 minutes. If you and I wax philosophical for 45 minutes, it doesn't matter because we're not boxed into a format. We don't have to have the same commercial breaks and all of that distracting stuff that happens on the radio. We just do it directly.
You and I are trying to keep these to about 30 to 35.
Well, 26 minutes is the ideal podcast. So we're a couple minutes over that right now. So how about this? So let's jump into this next step because we're talking about the mindset shift. And so you talk about something that needs to happen in a specific order. Do you mind if we go there and then we'll jump on tactics and we'll wrap up for today.
And regular listeners are going to, you know, see that there's some continuity here of message, which is really important to creating your own brand.
Yeah.
But the order is that if you're going to go out and you're going to have a shift and you want to, of mindset, there's some things you need to do right. One is that you have to have a story in a niche.
Mm-hmm.
So that story needs to prove that you understand your prospect, that you care for their welfare. And that you're different.
Mm-hmm.
The different has to be better as well.
Right.
And you need, and your story has to be able to tell that.
Now you also talk about proof, right? So after you understand who you're going to go after, and have that story and have that niche, you do talk about social proof. So let's talk about that as part of the marketing components you need.
Yeah. So once you've told your story, you've got to continuously prove that you care about them, that you understand who they are, and that you're the expert and that you work with that niche.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got to prove your niche expertise. How do you do that? You write blog posts, you have your own podcast, you write a white paper, mm-hmm. create a checklist, do a course, have an assessment, right? You just name these things off. You do so, and you share it. That's mm-hmm. the next most important thing
mm-hmm.
is if you are expecting to build a relationship that's going to be a lifetime relationship or last a long time, you have to be generous with your wisdom and you have to be a patient prospector. And when you do those things, people recognize that you're not going to sell them, that you are going to build a relationship with them, care for them, do all the right things. And your proof of expertise could also be your packaging, your process, how you right. work, how you operate. But that's less important than you talking about things that are really important to them, things that they want to overcome, things that they're emotionally charged up about. scared about things like that, right?
You know, Kirk, you had taught me something when we first started doing podcasts, and really even before that, you kept telling me, Matt, you need to give more stuff away. And I don't know if you remember this, but I was really resistant to that. I was like, that's my intellectual property. I'm not giving crap away. But dude, the minute I started following your instructions and taking your advice, and I started giving more and more and more away, whether that was through videos or through podcasts like this or through articles that I've written, my inbound, now it didn't happen overnight, but my inbound leads and my ability to close business I had so many more leads, and it was so much easier to close business, because exactly what we've been talking about throughout this entire process is people felt like they got to know me and were connected with me so much more because they got to hear my personality. They got to understand where my brain was, but there are always still people who want help, and I don't want people who want to do it themselves. We want, and with Top Advisor Marketing, we want people who are interested in delegating, but here's the deal. I'm delegating some time to you. We have 5 minutes. So talk about the tactics, and then let's go ahead and wrap up today's podcast. We've got a lot more to talk about on other ones.
I'm gonna beat your deadline. So
nice.
Here's some really important things to look for, and these you call these mindset tactics, whatever you want to call them. Look for simple things to be better at marketing for. And the most important reason to look for simple is one is a lot of times simple costs less money, which is a really good thing, and you can stay focused. But most importantly, it helps you sustain. So look for things that you can sustain. Marketing is really sustaining. It needs to be sustained to be effective. A great example is if you have to create a niche market. If you don't have a great niche market already built into your client base, mm-hmm. you're gonna have some lag. So when you start a new niche, if you're sitting there waiting at the 3 month mark saying, where's the leads coming now? I started my podcast, blah, blah, blah. You know, I've got, 250 people on LinkedIn, 50 likes on Facebook. Where are the people? Where are the people? You've got to spend time and you got to get out and never, ever rely on your digital network to do all the work for you.
Right.
It's bad karma. Right. The guy, I just talked about the guy at the barbecue talking about his podcast. Get out and do that. Get out in places where your audience is going to be and make sure they understand that you're the man or the woman, and that you've got in your practice a different perspective, a different way to do business, a different audience, and you're generous and all those things. And having a podcast, starting off with a podcast is a great way to introduce what you do. Definitely different. Look for the best value. There's lots of marketing tactics you can do. You can do print marketing, digital marketing if you want. You can do seminar marketing. They cost a lot of money. They're sunk. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to get into that in a second. And so look for the best value. What is the most effective for the best price? And I think podcasting is potentially there. Social media definitely there if you can do it right. These days, you don't want to do a lot of social media. You want to do quality, authentic,
sure,
personable, intimate. And you have to focus on those things. It's not quantity, it's quality, just like everything else we're talking about. Look for stuff that works while you sleep. Podcast works while you sleep. A blog post works while you sleep.
Yep.
Now, you could say that an online Facebook ad works while you sleep because people are up all night on Facebook, unfortunately for them, probably. But I don't necessarily mean that. I mean things that what I would call a momentum. So look for momentum too. So momentum is things that have shelf life, and the minute that they don't expire, if that makes sense. So a podcast, a blog post, a paper, those things have longevity, your website, things like that. But if you're putting advertising dollars in and you're not getting it right away, those can sink you. So look for more things that are momentum based versus sunk costs. And look for, and have a long-term focus. Don't expect to change your niche or to implement a referral or a new brand and expect things to turn around immediately. Some people know how to get that done. They've got great practice. They already have a niche built into their business and they're just exploiting it or leveraging it, if you will. Some people have to start, further back. So I think you need to think about those things. But long-term focus, expect something to take 18 to 24 months to gain a little bit of momentum.
And you can absolutely speed that up if you get out there and you do what everybody should be doing, which is singing the praises of your business and really talking about who you are, what you do, and what makes you unique. Now, I'm going to do some social proof here, and then we're going to wrap up episode 31 today. Our team created an infographic about this podcast specifically. And for the last 6 months, this is crazy. Now, we have applied some of our content multiplier service on this, which is something that we offer to advisors. Since we've been doing this for 6 months, we have gotten over 4,000 downloads to our podcast, the podcast you're listening to right now. And we've had over 30.
Those are downloads, which are actually different than plays.
Right.
Plays, we don't actually.
We don't know.
Track.
Yeah. And part of
so
that.
Somebody can go to our channel, click play for right. 5 minutes or the whole thing. It doesn't count as a download.
Well, and the same thing happens. So we publish this through irish.xyz, and we don't actually see those plays because it's an emulation, and we're not going to get into the technicals of all of that. But what has been shown is we've had over 30,000 people who have interacted and clicked on our stuff. That is one of the main reasons why Top Advisor Marketing is already taking off in the way that it is, with all of these new leads and new inbound marketing and people calling us. And we can do this for you. And it works. We know it works. It's a lot of fun. Kirk and I really enjoy it. Everybody who we get on podcasts, even if they're wet blankets and they don't have the greatest personality, it comes across differently in a podcast, because when you have a podcast host, when you know you're being interviewed, you're talking about things that you're confident, it really brings out what real personality you have. So we know this works. We know that there is a massive decline and demise of what is working in prospecting right now. You've got to be able to market with 21st century techniques. We do it. There are other people who do it. But even if you don't either use us or use somebody else, just go through those mindset shifts that Kirk talked about so that you can truly change your practice and become a top marketer. So, Kirk, with that, have a good day, man.
Wonderful.